slept on an air mattress.
No, I slept on an air mattress. Yes, I own the
that
house.
That is not what.
And I slept on an air mattress instead of sleeping in the bed in the house that I own.
Hey, I've slept on the floor in the studio before. I didn't even have an air mattress when I did it. Of course, I also don't own the house.
Yeah, no, like, and like, not for nothing, like, it's a decent air mattress, but it's one of those that loses air at a pretty rapid pace. So, like, every 2 hours, you're on the floor, and you have to reach over and and just refill the mattress. Until it feels like real bad.
At least you have to fill it with your lungs.
No.
Oh, God.
I'm not going to wake up every 2 hours and spend 30 minutes refilling the mattress.
No.
If that were the case, I would just sleep on the fucking floor.
That's when that mattress turns into a blanket.
This air mattress started out being inflated, and now it's just a comforter.
Oh, man.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I had to get up at like 6 this morning.
Ooh, jeez. Wow.
Yeah, well, because, so Alex's girlfriend painted my girlfriend's face, because my girlfriend has like a cosplay Instagram and all that stuff,
yeah.
And then Sarah does like effects makeup, so she painted her like Venom, and so I had to wake up at like 6 so she could go check in at work and do like the 10 minutes of stuff she had to do, and then make it over to Alex's in time to get
face painted,
to get the face painted and everything before he came down here.
Yeah.
So
what, an hour and a half for you guys?
Hour and 10, hour and 15, because I'm in High Point.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it's not terribly far. I mean, it's not as bad as coming straight from Winston or Greensboro, because it's a little bit more south. But, and actually it's pretty cool, because, like, the whole Sarah and Taylor working together thing on the, like, costuming and makeup stuff is pretty, it's pretty stellar. Like, it looks really cool. So,
yeah,
I'm happy with it.
It's crazy. Oh, man. I'm so jealous of how much traction she's getting already just because she has boobs and on Instagram. This is sad. Like, fight so hard. She's got, like, 700 followers in a month. It's like, what?
And, like, we post stuff every week, and we can't even get that on Facebook.
Uh-huh. I know that feeling.
It's the 7th largest nation in the world, Facebook is.
Yeah.
And we can't get more than 400 people to press fucking like on the page. I've been doing this for 4 years. That's less than 100 subscribers a year.
Yeah.
It's terrible. It's terrible. It's all right, though. And welcome to Name Redacted Podcast.
On that note.
As always, I'm Alexander Fulmer.
And I'm Chris Nielsen.
And Colin is not here. For whatever reason.
Because it's Saturday.
So, with us, we're doing take two this week on an episode that was really good.
It was so good.
That just somehow exploded in our computer. And we're not really sure exactly what happened, but we looked at the file and we were like, this won't play.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. Yeah. Like, it just, like,
it was heartbreaking.
Yeah, it corrupted real bad, because it was one of, like, the few interviews we had that, like, that just went really smoothly the whole way through.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, perfect. This is, like, what we've been aiming for. This is why it corrupted, because because we can't have nice things.
No. We can't be happy about it.
No.
Can I say the one thing I remember about that episode? The only thing I remember that happened on it, and I was so proud, was at the end, who the hell knows why, we got to talking about a Chinese egg.
Yes.
And
yeah.
I made a John Woo hard-boiled joke.
Yes, you did.
I was so proud. I was more proud of that than anything I've ever made in my life. And I was like, I can't wait for that episode to come out just so I can put it on my resume. Hard-boiled reference. And then you're like, nope, it's gone. And I was like, oh, the one time in my life I make a great joke like that, and it's gone. So I just had to relive it now.
Not worried about the Miller World content or anything like all this awesome stuff that I've been writing that people seem to like.
No.
Nope. Hard-boiled John Woo joke.
Because
top of the resume.
That's gold.
It is gold.
I mean, it's a 2%er, you know? That's hard to do. A 10%er is great. A 2%er, that's where the art is.
It is. Like, you have to, like, really focus it in until, like, 3 people in the room get it.
Especially when that joke just pops in your mind in front of the right audience.
Right,
too,
right.
Like,
because they have to be, like, cinema nerds and breakfast fans. That's why it's so great. It's the most limited audience in the world.
That joke right there, on top of the other joke. That's it. That, like, life goals accomplished.
This is an untapped market. This is a niche.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, I just had to get the glory for the hard-boiled joke.
We have a breakfast and movies podcast.
Yeah.
Louis C.K. be damned. this is where the real magic in comedy happens. which I appreciate as a comedy buff. I'm not a comedy buff. I just like comedy. That's really all that is. I don't know shit about comedy. I just like laughing. This is really the end of that.
I've always been, since I was way too young to be into it, I've been a hardcore comedy nerd. And yeah. I don't write comedy. I don't perform comedy. It's not my gift. Mm-hmm. But as like, just as a thought experiment, comedy is insanely amazing.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. Because a lot of it is so based on this idea of like, let me take the saddest thing I can think of.
Yeah.
And make it, and not for nothing, like, I think the reason that that works is, like, you don't have to be happy about things that are already happy.
Right.
So, like, that's why comedy is so much about, like, depressing stuff, is because you need to laugh about sad things.
Mm-hmm.
But things that are good are already good. Yeah. So leave them alone.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think it's also great because, like, comedy, just, like, comic theory in general, sort of takes, like, the entire creative process and just, like, boils this down to, like, this pure essence of, like, it's you and a group of people. And you've got, like, 5 words, you know, like, up to a minute to make them laugh.
A good comic will tell a story in one line that would take me 100 pages to tell.
Yeah.
That's what blows my mind.
See, I think it'd be really fun to get Cliff on an episode with, like, J.D., Micah, Reed, like, our buddies who do stand-up comedy.
Fun. Oh, yeah.
Because we have a very tight group of friends that do stand-up and are very good at it that, like, we get on the show every once in a while. It'd be very fun to listen to you guys have a conversation about that, and you talk about the analytical side,
right,
talk about, like, the life.
Yeah.
We're just pretentious writers, and they're making fart jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I've always said at one point, I've never done it, I want to go do an open mic just to fail at it, because I know I'm going to.
I think you would do pretty good. I've done it one time, and it went pretty well. It was a small room, but I got a lot of laughs, had a big out. Like, it was a slow start. I definitely learned a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And compared to, like, you know, like a seasoned comic, I guess it's kind of bombing, but, like,
right.
I think you've definitely got the mind for it. Plus, you'd be shocked at how low the bar is for open mic comedy.
Yeah.
Because it's like, hey, you get a free beer if you get up and talk into a microphone for 5 minutes.
As long as your shtick isn't just scream at everybody for 5 minutes, you're usually pretty okay. Like, no Sam Kinison anymore. Like, you can't Sam Kinison, or else they just tune out.
I'm lucky enough, living in Raleigh, I've grown up going to Good Nights Comedy Club.
Right, yeah.
Which is a big thing.
In the comedy scene, that is a legendary club.
Yeah.
To the point that their open mics are audition only open mics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, so even their open mics are better than you're going to find in most places because they make people try out.
Well, it's funny because, like, I've been listening to JD and Micah's podcast for a while called The Open Micers, where they talk about this stuff and they have, you know, open mic comics come on and stuff.
Yeah.
And they talk about Good Nights, and there's this one of the very early episodes, one of the dudes that comes on is like, yeah, I had an audition for an open mic.
Yeah.
And I was like, doesn't this fucking defeat the purpose? Like, right? Because at this point in time, it's no longer open.
Yeah.
It's kind of closed. Like,
it's not transparent, it's translucent.
I feel like they've missed the mark on the word. Like, I feel like we have different definitions of the word.
Open audition comedy showcase?
Yeah. Like, and that's fine. But, like, no, because of my buddies and stuff, it's funny because Colin will go out and do comedy too. And he says every time he sees, like, JD, Micah, and Reed, apparently they ask a lot whether or not I'm ever going to come perform. And I'm like, as soon as I quit my day job, like, sure.
Yeah.
But I work 3 to 11, and also the idea terrifies me because I'm so not a stand-up person. I'm so much more a reactionary person.
Yeah.
And motherfucker, I'm not going to do crowd work.
Right.
Like, as my first thing.
Right.
I'm not doing that because that'll go over terribly because I will say the wrong thing to the wrong person.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm that guy, so.
I don't know if you guys have met Jeremiah, who did Internet Picnic Together.
Yeah.
I think he said he's done stand-up one time, and he has the weirdest personality for that I want to see him do it.
Yeah.
Because
talking to him was interesting.
He's like the nicest, sweetest guy in the world, the most genuine person, but if he doesn't know you, the first time I met Jeremiah, he came into the studio where I was working for an interview. And he's an animator and designer. And he came in, and at the time he had super long hair, because he was doing this thing like, until I get a job I like, I'm not cutting my hair. And he was like, he was all into it. And he comes in the studio, and when his default, he doesn't know you, and he's nervous in meeting you, is to speak in an Italian accent.
No.
Except it's a bad Italian. That's so amazing. I'm not kidding. The first time, he's now my closest friend. The first time I met him, when he walked out of the room, I looked at everybody else and went, is that guy Swedish? Because he's got the long hair and this weird horgy-borgy kind of like attitude about him. And I'm like,
he's chef from...
Yeah, he really was. And I was like, what is with this dude? And then I got to know him and I was like, oh, you're just genuinely an eccentric person. And that's your defense. That's his way of breaking the ice, is to go turn on Mario. But it's Mario by way of Stockholm. I don't understand, but I've always wanted to see him do stand-up, because I feel like he would crush it.
Yeah.
It'd be a very interesting thing to watch, because like when I met him, because the first time I met him was at NC Comic Con this year. And like, it was at the booth, and like he's all tooth smile. And like, just weird grinning the whole time, and I was like, you're either super uncomfortable or you were the nicest motherfucker I've ever seen.
Yep, it's both. Hoyt Silva is, of course, here at the show, and Hoyt and I are buddies. Jeremiah had seen a bunch of Hoyt's work, but they'd never met. Right. So Hoyt came by the table, because Hoyt was one of our earliest interviews on Internet Picnic.
Okay.
And when Hoyt comes by the table, Jeremiah's first thing, never met the man in his life, his first thing is, Hoyt, get out of here, you talented son of a bitch! And he told me later, Jeremiah was like, I see Hoyt kind of going like, I don't know if you like me or not. I don't know if this is genuinely a problem, if you actually want me to leave, or if that's your
way of
saying... Some
sort of weird backhanded compliment.
Right, is that your way of saying, well done, buddy, or what is
I don't understand how sarcasm works. Yeah. And so then it just deflects and becomes this weird avant-garde sort of commentary on life.
Yeah.
And that's what I see in that comment.
Absolutely. That's him.
Chris, you look like you're contemplating on it pretty hard.
No, I was just like I've done that. Like, I've been that guy who has just, like, made some weird sarcastic remark that does... I don't know, it's just...
well-meaning?
It's like the 80s teen comedy and the nerds trying to talk to the girl. It's just,
yeah.
What? Like, we're, like, beginning of Spider-Man, we're just, like, waving to the guy behind him. You know, like...
I had that happen to me, God, 2-3 months ago now. It was right, and this comes into play, I promise. It was right as the new Doom Patrol book started up. Gerard Way's Doom Patrol just started. And I just read it, and I just talked about it with Richard Case. So it was very much in the back of my head. I'm in line at Starbucks, and I get up to the front, and there's a very cute barista, and she takes my order, and she says, what's your name? And I said, my name's Cliff. And she goes, oh, well, that's cool. That's like a superhero name. And in my head, I'm going,
no, it's not.
I've heard about this. I've heard about people saying this. I think this is flirting.
I've heard about this concept called flirting. I don't know what it looks like or sounds like.
I've never seen it up close, but I've heard it exists. And so I go, I'm like, yeah, I don't think there is a superhero. And then all of a sudden, I pause, and I go, Cliff Steele, the Doom Patrol.
Oh, God.
And she just gives me this look, just like, oh, you just fell 20 points right now. And she's kind of like nods and smiles like, all right, dude, you fucked that up. Have a nice day, ma'am. It was very nice to meet you.
Thank you for my coffee. I gotta go.
You seem like a very nice person. I'm sorry I fucked up this exchange. Better luck next time.
I've had that moment where I've walked up to a person that I really, like, I've heard of and, like, heard good things about, especially in the comic book world, and I can't remember who I did this to, but it was somebody who had a lot of buzz around them, and I walked up, and I didn't realize I was at their booth, and they, like, somebody was like, this is so-and-so, and I got handed their work. And I went, oh, fuck you, this is amazing. And, like, I don't know why the words fuck you came out, but, like, I think it was, like, me being super impressed and also being super intimidated and being like, oh, I am also important, like, and talented, and you must know that I too do things that are important and talented. And it was super awkward, and then he was like... Thanks, man. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, good recovery.
We also have a lot of weird, like, terms we use for things. Yeah. You know, like, because, like, we hang out with a lot of the same people, and we go to the cons with podcasts and see a lot of the same people. So you get these weird inside jokes, and then it just becomes, like, part of your vernacular, right? Yeah. You say these things, and everybody's like, what are you talking about? Or, like, you use, like, I don't know, like, the key joke from a story you have becomes this verb that right. exemplifies the situation, right? Yeah. Like, what do you mean tomato soup? Like, what is that? I don't understand.
The term eat shit has become a compliment for me. Like, yeah. I'm just. Like, people who don't know me are very turned off by the fact that I use eat shit as a compliment. But, like, I'll see something that I love, and I'll be like, oh, eat shit, that is awesome. And they're like, why should I eat shit? I'm like, because it's
you're
good.
Better than me.
Because I'm slightly jealous, but also...
Because fuck you.
That's why.
To your point earlier about, like, when you're at shows and stuff like that, and you meet somebody, and you want to get to that membrane of being like, I'm also a creator,
yeah.
so that you can talk business. And it's not like an arrogance thing, but it's just like, just to get to that awkward...
Right. I'm having to learn that right now, and it's very difficult.
A year ago, at this show, I was here at MiniCon, I was walking around, and the Miller World thing...
Which is where we are right now. We didn't say that. We're at Charlotte MiniCon right now.
Now you know. Knowing is half the battle. Continue.
And the Miller World thing hadn't come out. Didn't come out until July. So, and I had it, and I knew it was coming out, and I was trying to, like, talk to people and meet other local artists and meet some people to kind of network, but I didn't want to be that guy to come up and be like, I've got a Miller World thing, you should talk to me.
Yeah.
So I'm talking to people and trying to just say, yeah, I've got some stuff coming out, and I'm, like, meeting folks, and everyone's cold shoulder.
Yeah.
Everyone's, so finally, one time, I was like, I gotta do it, I'm not this guy, but I gotta try it, and I go up to the table, I'm talking, I'm like, yeah, I got some stuff coming out and working on, you know, trying to meet other locals and network, and he gives me a card, he gives me a business card, and it's just like the standard, just has his name and email address, like, that's it.
Yeah.
No personal details or anything else.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I look at the card and I just go, yeah, I got this thing coming out with, like, Image and Miller World later this year, and the guy stops.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
And he goes, let me give you my real card. And reaches behind the table and pulls out the real card, and I was like, that's fucking weird.
See, we've had that. That's
happened to us. Yeah.
That's common.
Like, because it's happened to us on different scales. With the podcast, it happens to us because most of the time people hear podcasts and they think you're bullshit. But then one of our real friends that, like, is in the industry walks by. Like, when we sometimes, like, we'll have, like, our buddy Mike Watkins will walk by us and people know who Mike is.
Yeah.
And, like, they'll see Mike walk by and come talk to us and they'll be like, they know Mike?
Yeah.
And then somebody else will come by, like, when we have Brock and Bo come by and start talking to us.
Yeah.
The big one...
Or, like, last year at Oak City, like, we just, like, slay... Everybody in the building got a button, I think.
Yeah.
And so
we
had people tracking us down by the end of it, like, whoa, like, everybody's talking about you, like, I really want to, like...
Well, we had my girlfriend in the most terrifying costume in the world going around, like, cupping buttons in her hands, like, slowly opening her hands like Pretty Woman and snapping it down on people. And, like, and walking up to people with the buttons, throwing them at them and being like, you smell better when you're sleeping. And, like, so, like, our marketing strategy was, like, you can't ignore this.
Yeah, no.
And, but, like, just like it was at, like, NC 2 years ago, Adam Hughes, like, talking to Adam Hughes was, like, this really weird thing where at first we were just some dudes that were going to be on a panel with them moderating, but then we, like, legitimately asked them questions about the content and all this other stuff, and they were like, oh, like, you guys are, like, legit. And now I have Adam Hughes in my phone as Adam fucking Hughes.
Right.
So, like, that's legit. That's for real. But, like, the funny thing is that like, we've had this issue with going around and, like, being like, yeah, we're with a podcast and stuff. And sometimes you just get the cold shoulder, unreceptiveness. But sometimes if we drop our name in the right situation...
Mm-hmm.
People will be like, oh, you're those guys.
Which is weird.
Which is super weird.
Yeah.
Because really, we're not...
Have you had any... It's probably a little different with what you guys are doing.
No, it's just... Actually, I was noticing it today for NC Comic Con. Because I mean, the last time... Of course, not that anybody's heard the last episode, but last time we sat down, this wasn't the case. I'm the media director for NC Comic Con now.
Yeah.
And so I don't realize how often my name is out there on press releases, my photos on the website, and all this kind of stuff. And I'm walking around, and people are just like, hey, I know you. And I'm like, no, you
don't. No.
Don't
lie.
Oh, wait, NC Comic Con. And they go, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
This has been one of the first times that started to happen, which is weird.
See, for us, it's weird because, like, when people know about us now, it's really not because of the show. Yeah. It's because of the conventions.
Yeah.
It's really more because of the conventions. Because we do have a decent number of people that listen. It's, those of you listening right now.
It is very rare to get recognized by listeners as opposed to people that recognize us as personalities from panels and stuff.
And, like, because we hit the floor and it's just non-fucking-stop.
Yeah.
And we also have very distinct appearances. And Colin does this thing called Headband Bros, which is amazing.
He got recognized for that.
Yeah, which is him and another one of our friends go to Heroes every year in cutoff shorts and tank tops and headbands and do fake interviews with people and ask them stupid questions and mispronounce a lot of stuff.
That's
funny. Just be like, oh man, what was it, the Ninja Turtles thing? So like, how cool are the Ninja Turtles? You know they're not real dudes, right? Nah, they're real. They're definitely real. How's Donatello? Is he good? Like, so, and it's that kind of like fake interview stuff, but it works because they get recognized for it.
Yeah.
See, it's weird being recognized, and I'm starting to come to that point with what you've had to do since like the Action Lab. Because I don't mention it when I first get to a table or anything. If I'm interested in an artist, I talk to them about their art, about color, and all that, and then. Like, I'll just slip in Action Lab into the conversation, and then immediately...
You see it.
You see the change.
Yeah.
And, like, because and it's even the same with friends of mine that I've been friends with for a long time that are artists that have been like, yeah, maybe we'll work on something someday.
Yeah.
And you know that that's not super genuine, but then you're like, hey, I have a title picked up.
Right.
By... A decent company.
I mean, that's just that the foot in the door that everybody talks about. I mean, that's that moment realizing. It is weird to watch it happen though, because it's always a lot different than you envision it being.
Yeah.
You know?
And just in the last couple of weeks, I'm lucky enough, and you guys know who it is, but just for him, I won't say it online. But I'm lucky enough to have a comic creator that's a good mentor of mine.
Yeah.
And he sent me this thing that there was a company looking for pitches for an anthology. And you had to query first and be invited to pitch, which is pretty standard.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me, he was like, dude, I don't care. Use my name. Mention what you send them, Miller World. Send them all this stuff. And I was like, I feel weird. He was like, no, I do it all the time.
That's a resume, man.
Yeah. He's like, and he's fairly established. He's like, I do it all the time. And so I said, that's what I did. I just sent this email. I sent all the shit in. And I get an email back immediately. We'd like to have you pitch for this.
Yeah.
And that's brand new for me. Mm-hmm. I'm used to that real uphill. I mean, even, you know, Miller World, I'm like one of 2,500 people.
Yeah.
And I'm just
clawing.
A total shot in the dark. Who the hell knows if anything's going to happen? To this, it's like, yep, we want three pitches. We have this. We'll look over them. It's very new and very strange. But it's also nice to get through that membrane because you feel like you can do the work.
Yeah.
You're not as worried about getting the work. I mean, you are. But you're not as worried about that as doing the work once you've got it.
Yeah.
And presenting the best stuff.
Yeah.
Which is a nice place to be.
Yeah. Which I think is sort of the counterintuitive part of it, right? Because, like, at least for me, when I was first starting out doing creative stuff, it was always like, man, I need an opportunity to do something. But those opportunities don't happen until you're doing something.
Yeah.
It's like, but then you're like, but I can't do anything unless I have a platform to do it. So then you got to build the platform, and then you do it by doing the stuff, and you inadvertently learn that. More times than not, you don't get those opportunities before you're ready for them, and you get to that point, and you're like, man, I'm really glad that I didn't get to do this thing before I learned how to do it.
Well,
you know?
Here's the thing is that, like, it's that moment when you're a kid trying to get a job that you really want, and you apply for it, and they're like, well, you need experience.
Yep.
And I'm like, well, that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
So if I need I need experience to get the job, how am I going to get the experience without having the job?
Right.
So, like, it's kind of that same thing in whatever field you're in. Like, there's a very strange, tricky way of going about getting the experience without having the job.
And
so,
I think it falls into the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours thing too.
Yeah.
I remember telling my dad one time, because I've been writing since I was 12 when I started, and I remember telling my dad when I was getting really serious about 16, 17, and dad being like, well, you're going to be published soon. And I was like, no. I said, it takes 10 years. I said, it'll take 10 years from the time
that's about right.
I start to the time, especially in major.
Yeah.
I had small stuff published in journals and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, to get something decent size, it's going to be 10 years.
Yeah.
And the Miller World thing happened. And, like, the day I found out, I remember texting my dad and going, hey, do you realize how long it's been since I started? And it was actually, I think, like almost 11 years. And it just holds true. And because, you know, I'm in a different position, and it's always weird to talk about because I don't want it to come across arrogantly, but I'm young to be doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And the thing I always tell people is, I just started early.
Yeah.
Most of the people I know who are now in their 30s and 40s, they started at my age.
Right.
I just happened to only love two things from the time I was 12 years old.
Yeah.
And just do those things all the time. That's the difference.
I think, I'm probably about, when I was a kid in elementary school, I actually, super weird, super embarrassing story. The girl that sat next to me in one of my classes, I had a crush on, and I wrote her a little poem, like a little love poem thing.
That's adorable. And
I left it on her desk, when we went to lunch, in hopes that she would get in the class before me and see it and all this stuff. I walk into the classroom and I look over and it's not on the desk and she's not in the classroom. And I'm like, motherfucker. So I sit down and my teacher's like, Alex, come here. And I was like, So I walked over to her.
Oh, no.
I walked over to her and she goes, did you leave this for Catherine? And I was like, no, I just wrote it. And I sit next to her and must have gotten onto her desk. And I don't know what is happening. And she goes, okay, well, regardless of how it got here, I really like this. I'd like to put it in an anthology.
Oh, no!
And mind you, at this point in time, I am fourth grade. So the first thing I ever get published is in fourth grade, and then I hit a 15-year dry spell. But I've had a lot of things published since I was a kid in anthologies.
Yeah.
But the weirdest thing is that you guys can join the conversation. You're going to be in another podcast episode soon.
Alex is telling embarrassing stories right now. So,
jeez, no.
But yeah, no, it is super weird.
What I love about that story, though, is from now the rest of your career, when somebody goes, what's the first thing you had published? You're like, Love Note, you're a fourth grader.
Yeah.
Don't tell them you were in fourth grade. Just leave it. Love Note, you're a fourth grader. That was my start.
What was the title of it?
Yeah.
Love Note, you're a fourth grader. I'm basically the guys that made that song about being in love with a 14-year-old that got really popular. I don't even remember what.
It's like the opposite of Stacey's Mom.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. There was a band that was really popular when we were in high school that had a song about being in love with a girl that was way too young. And I can't remember.
I know the song you're talking about, and I can't think of it either.
Like, it sounds like Hey There, Delilah, but it's not Hey There, Delilah.
Yeah.
Oh. It's one of those.
Like a Chris Hansen special.
Oh, God, please do stand-up clips.
He's going to show up, any minute in the show and just ask us to take a seat. And be like, is your online handle love letter to a fourth grader? yeah, that was me.
I'm sorry. But no, it's funny because when I got back into the idea, because I had turned super jock for a while, and when I decided I didn't want to do that anymore, I focused back on writing, and I started seriously writing again around the time I was 20. And lo and behold, 29 years old, well, 28, my book got picked up, and I was like, that 10-year thing is about
that's about right.
There's some weird science to it.
Yeah.
It's very, very true.
And, it's, it's awesome, but it's also weird and terrifying all at the same time, because you're like, oh, man, they have faith in me, but, that doesn't mean anything about the rest of the world.
No. It's like Neil Gaiman and Amanda Palmer called the Frog Police.
Yeah.
Where you're just sure that somebody at any moment's going to come and go, oh, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. We talk about imposter syndrome on the show
a lot. Absolutely. Yeah. It's also weird because people don't realize, too, whenever something does pop, there's that thing of like, oh, well, this is your first thing. And it's like, no, I've had three other careers.
Yeah.
Before this started. For me, it was indie film. When indie film was in North Carolina, I was working in that. I had a feature film script picked up. We tried to make it for 2.5 years, and it fell apart. And it was, madness. I have failed way longer than I've had anything good happen.
Yeah.
That's the key to success, is working through that. I'm actually, this is a weird little aside. If I'm able to actually put an actual, credits and dedication page in my book,
yeah,
and since I've since the thing got picked up, I've wanted to do this, which is I wanted to dedicate it to my parents. And what I was going to put in there is, you know, thank you to Phyllis and Steve for showing me that it's okay to fail as many times as you want,
yeah,
as or as many times as possible, as long as you keep trying.
Oh yeah.
And that's kind of something that I very much think that applies to what me and Chris and Colin do, what you do, what everybody does that is, you know, any kind of endeavor is, you're going to miss the mark way more than you're going to hit it.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just about, like, not worrying about how many times you miss it. It's just about worrying about the one or two times that you hit it.
And also about learning not to worry about missing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a huge Aaron Sorkin fan.
Yeah.
Especially in screenwriting and that kind of stuff. And he has a great thing. He did a masterclass, a big masterclass series that's online now. He did this amazing masterclass on it that I got to see. And he was talking about baseball players, because he's a huge like sports guy, I think. And he said, if a baseball player hits one out of every three pitches, it's enough to qualify them for the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
That means they missed far more than they ever hit. And they're in the Hall of Fame.
Yep. Yeah.
Much less just being a good baseball player.
Yeah.
That's an excellent baseball player. You know, and that really, I mean, that makes me feel better.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm working on, you know, I've been working on stuff for a while that's been really hard. And it allows me to go, well, it's okay that it's hard.
Yeah.
It's okay that maybe this isn't my magnum opus. It's just a good book. It's just a good thing that people are going to enjoy. And maybe the next thing will be that, you know, Alan Moore level thing that we all want to make.
Yeah.
You know, who knows?
One day I'll be Brian K. Vaughan.
Right.
But you don't want to start out with that. You don't want to start out with the masterpiece.
See, and that scares me.
Living your own shadow.
That constantly
scares me. But you also don't need to
be
afraid of it, because I think the thing is, like, the idea behind that magnum opus masterpiece piece of work is sort of, once you've been working on stuff, I think that comes from getting better and developing and working and growing, but also learning your audience and fine-tuning it that way, and then being able to flip that creative process around backwards and come at it like that from that pretentious outside, like, I want to do all of these things and the pieces are going to fall in places, after you actually tangibly know how to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
I was really actually scared of that for a long time, because the first feature film script that I wrote got picked up. Thank God it didn't end up getting made. Because, like, I look at it now and I'm like, oh, this would not have been a good start. But, you know, at the time, it was huge. First comic I do is Image and Miller World. And I'm like, that just scares the hell out of me when you're starting at that place.
Yeah.
It's like, I always, just as a, I mean, I'm very thankful for that opportunity. But even as a creator, I'm like, no, let me fuck around with nobody looking at me.
Yeah.
For a little while.
I mean, but yeah, if you're good at a thing, though, you're good at a thing.
Yeah.
But also, you did.
Right.
Right. And so that's the thing. And I think that scales a lot of times, because if you're grinding and you're ambitious and you're putting in work, it's funny because it still hits at that, like, that 10-year point, because of just that's how long it takes to meet people and network and hone your craft to an extent. But if you're that guy who's super prolific by that point, you're going to start at a bigger opportunity more times than not than if you aren't that guy, right? And so the other guy who's just like, I don't know, like the teacher that writes children's books in his free time, he might also take 10 years and start at that lower level and have that benefit of nobody. But you still have that breadth of work that you do that nobody's looking at, you know?
Well, I mean, and that's the thing is that, like, if you think about it, if you make all this stuff and you do all these stories, all these pitches, that, you know, over time you're like, okay, in the last 10 years I've made 40 pitches, I've thrown out 38 of them,
mm-hmm.
and because I just don't want them to... That is essentially the same thing as pitching those 40 things, getting most of them turned down, and getting maybe two of them that are actually kind of shit picked up, and then you're like, oh man, this was not that great, should have never gotten this picked up, and then those two things that are good... Like, it's the same thing, it's just you're not putting it out there for people to see.
Right.
Because everybody who's any type of creative person who does anything story-building-wise knows that you're going to swing and miss at story concepts 100 times.
Well, and I think most of the people that end up in their own shadow are the people that just happen to catch a weird zeitgeist moment or something before they're really seasoned in their craft, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you're Hanson and you put out Mbop when you're a kid, nobody's going to listen to the indie rock masterpiece
right,
you put
right.
out in 15 years, you
right.
know?
Because they didn't.
Yeah.
And it was good.
I was actually talking to a friend a few weeks ago who was a creator, he was a comic creator, and he made the point. He said, well, you know, the guy who wrote Breaking Bad also wrote Hancock. He's like, he said, that is a creative career.
Yeah.
You know, Vince Gilligan wrote fucking Hancock. He said, you don't always knock it out of the park. you know, you sometimes you find your pitch and you smash it. All I can see was weird looks out of the corner of my eye, and it's like, I don't know what she's doing, but just prophylactically, I'm gonna.
Look, man, you don't have to deal with these boobs. I do. I get it. I understand. I got tatas. Yours are better.
His brush is vertical. Yeah. Keeping it all held in there.
Yeah.
These little
suspenders.
They cover the nips.
All right. I don't remember where I was at before I flipped off
Facebook. No, it seems about
we talked about tits, but I think that's good.
No, that's where
we went, where it needed to go.
I think we were talking about Hancock crap.
Well, yeah, but.
Okay, we'll see you outside. That's my family.
But just that truth of you, even the best guys don't kill it every single time.
Yeah. Well, you can't.
No.
Like, there's just, like, just also, probability and odds.
Yeah.
Because if you do, right, like, that's a, you get, like, the M. Night Shyamalan thing. Yeah. Oh, it's a couple that are awesome. Oh, no.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
But here's the thing. Also, if everything you do is great, then isn't everything you do just mediocre at that point?
Right.
Because it's just, this is the status quo.
Yeah.
Like, my status quo is amazing, sure, but, like, now everybody's just like, no, it's another masterpiece, fuck, whatever.
Right. Well, it's like, you know, in one of his books...
all the Coen brothers.
Yeah.
In his biography...
Tarantino.
Yeah. Yeah. Stephen
it's King, all good. I don't know.
Stephen King talks about that in his biography. Where he's like, we all write a stinker, and as the author of Maximum Overdrive, I'm qualified to say so. Yeah. I mean, the guy made The Shining and Maximum Overdrive. How is that the same guy? But he did.
Hey, man. Woo made Hard Boiled. Just saying.
I like to think he made Hard Boiled so we could make these jokes. You know what I mean?
Did something right.
It's like, I have a friend whose theory is that Star Wars only existed so that Spaceballs could exist.
That's not a bad point.
Yeah. And I like that. I'm like, you might have, because I love Star Wars, but Spaceballs is a whole other thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it is truly a masterpiece.
And it would never happen otherwise.
That's
so it's
true.
Like the universe, it's like the thing, was an old George Carlin line, that the universe, we're all worried about putting plastic on the earth, but what if the earth wanted plastic and it just had to make us first? And we plastic? I think it's that. The universe wanted Star Wars, it wanted Spaceball, so like, yeah. We'll give George Lucas this whole idea so that this awesome old Jew will take it and make it much better and afford all Spaceballs.
That gives me hope, man.
Right? Right. I mean, it means that maybe the next 4 years of our lives can mean something.
Well, I feel like, as a guy who runs a show that is massively based off of satire, I have hope.
Yeah.
That maybe someday somebody will look back at this and we will have existed for something better than what we've actually done.
Yeah.
We're not that good at this, and maybe someday some brilliant kid will find this, overdub it, make something that makes billions of dollars, and we'll be like,
right.
Where's my cut, kid?
Yeah, like, can I have, like, a grand?
Yeah.
Like, I gotta pay this car off. Just saying.
It's like you go back and you read old Batman, and you're like, wow, I'm glad Frank Miller exists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This stuff sucked, and it took somebody like him to come around and go, no, this can be poetic and beautiful and amazing.
Yeah.
Especially considering, like, there's some old Batman stories where he's just dragging a guy behind the battle. Like, this is before
Batman
the
versus Superman?
No, like, before...
This is how that happens in that movie.
Well, like, before the, like, Batman no-killing thing happens... Like, and the line on it is, it's better than he deserves.
Oh.
Like, and he's road hauling this fucking guy behind him, and you're just like, wow, Batman, like, you're a prick.
Yeah.
Like, for real.
That's amazing.
That does make me want to see, like, George Miller's Batman.
Ooh.
Because, you know, he was tapped to do Justice League at one point, and it fell apart.
Oh, yeah.
But now, I would kill to see George Miller take something like Batman and do it, because, I mean, they're going dark, they're going fucked up. They've thrown the... Batman actually cares about people thing out the window at this point.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Well, it's old broken bat.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it is. Is like those storylines from some of the alternate universe Batman where he's just so demoralized that he's just like, fuck it, like my way's not working.
Yeah.
And like, I kind of like that because it is one of those things where I have seen 70 years of Batman being like, no killing.
Right.
Killing is bad. Yeah. And now I'm kind of like, let's put a Batman that kills people on the main screen.
Yeah, and I would go with that if the movie opened with a reason to show him being a bastard and to show him getting broken.
Just look at Ben Affleck's face.
What was the song?
No, you're not wrong at all.
The song they put over him, Hollow Darkness, My Old Friend,
yeah.
That video. Yeah, that. But, like, that was my thing with some of the stuff. I am totally cool with give me broken Batman, give me fucked up Batman, give me end of his rope guy. But you gotta tell me that's him.
Yeah, like, you can't just shoehorn it in and expect me to get it.
Right, especially after, like you said, 70 years of no guns, no killing, no this, no that, to just start and go, no, this Batman's edgy. It's like, well, earn it. Earn it in a story.
Yeah,
give me
yeah.
a reason. Make me invest so that when he breaks that guy's nose, it means
that you're cheering.
I'm cheering.
Devastated.
Right.
And not just like, oh, Batman's holding a gun. What?
Yeah, but it's like, oh, Ben Affleck is moody today.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess that's what this one's gonna be.
I mean, not everybody can be Flashpoint Thomas Wayne Batman.
Yeah.
Like, let's just be honest here.
But think about how devastating that was because they acknowledged it was different. It wasn't just, oh, this is the new Batman.
Oh, like, he just, when he drops Harley off the top of the roof,
oh,
and you're just like, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for being a son of a bitch.
That first panel where the sword just sink right through somebody, and you're like, okay, yeah, this is, I'll go with this now because I understand his pain.
I'm on board.
Right. But we understand that because we know who he is.
Yeah.
All these new Batman movies, they just start them and say it's the same guy, and then they want to throw in new traits. And you're like,
yeah.
Well, then it's not the same guy. And you never earn that.
But see, the tricky thing is how do you balance that with the current climate of just like exposition fatigue?
Mm-hmm. I mean, they spend so much time in the new Batman v Superman movie in that opening, which is gorgeous, but they're rehashing the origin. The old origin. Make that sequence the Joker beating Jason Todd to death with a wrench.
Then
that movie opens and Batman has a reason to be pissy.
Yeah.
He has a reason to feel that way because they show the costume,
yeah.
which nobody else in the world knew what the hell that meant.
Right.
90% of the people who went to see that movie didn't
Joke's
know.
Jokes on you.
And even for people that didn't know, it was just a cameo, not
right.
anything. And it wasn't a plot point.
Right. So it's like, if you want to make him that way, instead of showing us the thing we've seen a million times, if you want him to be different, make him different.
I mean, like, at that point in time, it's just reading into the situation and deriving your own ideas from it.
Yeah, I mean, to go back to George Miller, look at the opening of Mad Max Fury Road.
Mm-hmm.
In a span of 5 minutes, you know who he is, why he's broken, why he doesn't have relationships with anybody in that movie, and he is not the same Mad Max as Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
They restart everything, they do everything, they do it in 5 minutes, and you're on the road, and you go, this guy's a badass,
yeah.
his family's
yeah.
died, he's this guy out in the wasteland, no one's on his side, and you're in.
And that's all you need.
And, yeah. and then there's no dialogue for the rest of the fucking movie.
Yeah.
You can do that with Batman.
Yeah.
You know, you can do that with these characters.
Yeah.
So, I want to switch gears a little bit here. Talk to us a little bit about Miller World and what you did for that. Because last time we talked to you, we actually didn't get to talk about this because it hadn't come out yet.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
now
yeah.
it is out, and I want to talk about it.
Yeah, sure. So, back in 2015, actually, Martin Miller put out his first global talent search looking for writers and artists to do short stories based on his extensive library of characters. And it's actually something Mark had tried to do a couple of times before through like Clint magazine when he had that, but it was never really under his control.
Mm-hmm.
So in this one, he did it, he put all the money behind it. He's like, I'm paying everyone's rates, I'm putting an editor on it, Rachel Fulton, who does Reborn now, she's amazing. So they put out this big talent search. And when they put it out, there were five or six titles you could pitch for. And it's what you would expect. It's Kick-Ass, it's Hit Girl, it's Kingsman, it's Chrononauts. And somewhere on the list, I think it was actually at the bottom of the list, they had American Jesus, which a lot of people don't even know that book, didn't know that book when he announced it. It's this 10-15-year-old book, came out called Chosen originally. It wasn't even called American Jesus. It's only 3 issues. He did it with Peter Gross. It happened to be one of my favorite comics of all time. When I first was really getting into comics, like hardcore, I was getting into Mark Miller, and I was like, I'm going to find everything he's done. And I didn't really care about superhero books at the time, so I was like, well, let me find the weird shit he's done, and I found Chosen. and it blew me away. So I happen to have the original issues in my collection and know them pretty well. And so I was looking at it, and I was like, well, I could pitch American Jesus. You know, everybody's going to do Kick-Ass. Everybody's going to do Kick-Ass. And those are great. I love those books, but everybody...
That's also a smart play, because if those are the things they're looking for, like... They're gonna choose a few of these, a few of those, and they want to hit those bullets.
And they're gonna do the one American Jesus thing.
Yeah,
exactly. And also, when they're getting in, you know, if they get in 1,000 Kick-Ass scripts and 10 American Jesus scripts, they're just gonna pay more attention.
Yeah, also true.
As reading, just logistically, I would do the same thing.
Yeah.
So I pitched a 5-page. We actually, it wasn't even a pitch. You had to write the whole story. It's only 5 pages, and I wrote a story called Undeath, which took place. If for fans of the original book, there's a great part in issue 3 at the end, the lead character, which for anyone also who doesn't know, it's a book about this kid who thinks he's the second coming of Christ. One day he has all these incredible powers, and his town freaks out, and it ends up spurring a holy war basically in the end. But in issue 3, he's bringing a dog back to life, and that's his way of proving who he is and what he can do. And Mark did this genius thing when he wrote the original book, where he took that moment and he kind of zoomed the camera out a little bit. It's a very intimate story. And for the first time, he pops out and he says, well, while he's healing this dog, here's the weird shit that's going on around the world because of the energy, essentially, the spiritual energy caused by this event. And it's things, I mean, it's very marked. It's things like babies being born with a full set of teeth and anyone having sex orgasms for like 2 straight hours. And it's all these like very strange things.
Yeah.
But I loved it. It was my favorite part of the book. So I just had the very simple what if pitch. What if during that time, for a few moments, just a couple of seconds, death was suspended? And just nobody could die. And that was my pitch.
Yeah, I like that.
And I pitched I sent in the script in like November of 2015. I wrote it like a month before and sat on it. Just that thing of like, ugh. And I'm not going to get it. Like, I'm going up. I'm sending this to Mark Miller. Like, there's no way. He's one of my icons. I was like, there's no way in hell. Finally, I just sent it in. I was like, well, no harm, no foul. It didn't cost me anything. Sent it in. And on December 23rd, is when he said he was going to make the announcement. I was at work. I was working at a film studio at the time, and I was the only person in the office. Everyone else was home or away for the holidays.
I have a thing in my brain that I want to happen, but I'm going to wait and see.
You'll see. I'm the only guy there. I was like, I even remember like talking to my boss. I was like, so I'm going to be the only person in the office? He's like, yeah. I was like, and all of our clients are out? He's like, yeah. And I was like, so you want me to come in? He's like, yeah. And I was like, all right, I guess. But it kind of worked
sounds
out.
Sounds terrible.
Because I knew that that it was going to be announced that day, and I was fully expecting I wouldn't make it. So I didn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
My dad felt bad because I'm by myself 2 days before Christmas, so he comes and, like, buys me lunch.
Kind of bummed out already, like, expecting to not be in the
studio. I didn't tell him, even though the announcements were coming out. Like, jeez. I was just like, I don't want to make a big deal. Mark, meanwhile, is on Twitter, and he's saying, I'm going to make a video. And Mark would admit this, he's technologically illiterate. So he starts tweeting, like, I can't get my computer to work. And so the announcement's like 3 hours late. And by this point, I was an editor at the studio at the time, so I had 3 giant screens.
Yeah.
So I have just his Twitter on one screen. It's working and refreshing his Twitter. And then finally he posts, congratulations to our winners, here's the announcement. And I click on it. I don't even read the post. I just scroll right down to the names, and I see Cliff Baumgartner, American Jesus, as the writer, paired with an artist who I didn't know at the time named Steve Beach. And I sit back from the computer, and I'm like, wait, I need to read the whole thing first to make sure those aren't, like, honorable mentions.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And or that he's not accidentally just dicking with us, you know? Well, these guys are good, but fuck them. Here's the guy. So I go back, read, and no, I'd actually won. So I sit back from the desk, and it's just all hitting me at once, especially not really at all expecting it. And I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And I stand up and I go running out into the studio to tell somebody, and there's no one there. And I'm by myself in the studio just looking around. And it was like the weirdest combination of the saddest moment of my life and the happiest moment of my life. And I'm just like, oh God. And so I like run back in the office and I call my dad and call my mom, and like my mom's crying on the phone. It was like I'd won an Oscar. It was the craziest thing. But then I got incredibly lucky to get paired with Steve Beach, who, anyone who doesn't know his work, he actually did a web comic called Tales from the U-Boat Bremen with Philip Kennedy Dick, who's now doing Warlords of Appalachia. And
Philip
so,
K. Dick.
Sorry. I know. So all of Steve's, all the pages of Warlords is online, so you can go check out his stuff. He is an insanely good artist. He has like a Bill Sienkiewicz kind of style. Very dark, very fucked up.
Awesome.
I remember him emailing me, because like, the way Millerworld does it is very much like DC or Marvel, where you don't really have a lot of contact with your team.
Yeah.
You send things to the editor sends things to the artist, and it goes back and forth like that. So I got up with Steve privately. I was just like, dude, I'm not trying to circumvent anything, but if you need something, just let me know.
Like, right, I want to know that. Right. I'm willing to collaborate if
absolutely,
you are.
Yeah, if you need to change something, if something doesn't fly, let me know. We'll work on it. And he emails me back, and his question, Steve is a great guy, but in writing, he comes across very serious.
Yeah.
And he comes and he's like, so what is your religious stance? And I was like, what? And I was like, well, I was raised in the South, raised for a Christian, but I'm obviously not anymore. And I was like, kind of like, if you read the script, I think it's pretty where I stand. And he later told me, they really like that joke.
Oh, Mike, we're getting trolled by our friends on the other side of the convention center.
And so they, later he told me when I actually met him, he came to North Carolina and did some signings because he's up in Pennsylvania, and he told me, he was like, I didn't know what American Jesus was, and they didn't send me the script. They just sent me and say, you won, and we've got you on a book called American Jesus. And he's like, this is Steve. Steve is just like, I just want you to know, I hate God. I'm not just religious. Like, I hate this shit. So, please, don't put me on something like that. And he was like, I was thinking about, like, can I do this? If it's like really... And so then he said he met me and was like, oh, okay, we're both going to hell. It's fine. It's fine. You can do this. And he did an insane job. I remember him sending me the thumbnails, and I thought they were the finished pages.
Wow.
I looked at the thumbnail, which looking at it now would probably insult him, but it was so good when I first got the thumbnails that I was like, he was like, are you okay with this? And I mean, it wasn't up to me anyway, it's Rachel's book at that point, but I was like, he was like, are you okay with this? And I was like, this is great. And then when the finals came in, it was some of the most beautiful work I've seen. So just to get to be paired with him was an insane honor off the jump. And then the rest of the book, too, has some really cool work in it. Probably my other, not to pull favorite, but Mark Abnett is a writer from Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
He and a guy named Osgur, I believe his last name is Yildirim. He's from Turkey, so I have no clue how to pronounce
it. Oh, that sounds Scott and Turk. Oh, that's
They did the Hit Girl story in the book, and it's called Mindy's ABCs. And it's the ABC rhyme, the nursery rhyme, but fucked up as it's Hit Girl telling it as she goes into a raid. So it's like S is for scrotum. She's cutting a guy's balls off.
That's
and,
awesome.
You know, that kind of stuff.
That's awesome.
That is a gorgeous... Dennis or Denise, I don't know how to say his name either because we only talk online. It's one of those things. Camp had a really wonderful Starlight story that's in the book, and he got with this crazy artist who does... She does this painterly... I don't even know that she had done sequentials before. Like, if you look at her work, it's all paintings, like big, giant paintings. And she did these just insane... Fever Dream paintings for his book. It's a really cool annual. And then on the heels of that, they're doing it again. Mark just put out, they just announced the winners back this previous December for the 2017 annual.
That's awesome.
Different stories, different characters. He's opened it up to a lot of his other stuff. And I think this time, like, Hit Girl and Kick-Ass run it, but they're going to be in the same story instead of being separate.
Right.
Yeah.
He's really switched up, so it'll be very new content, new material.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
And it's cool to Mark because it really is his effort to say, how are we going to find talent in this business? If what we were talking about earlier, if you don't have experience...
Absolutely. If you don't give anybody a chance...
How are you
going to
get a job for Image if you don't have any experience? He gives you that.
Yeah.
And you get paid. He pays standard Marvel DC pager.
That's awesome.
So it's a really cool opportunity. I hope it, for him, I hope it continues. All the money, all the proceeds went to charity, the Golden Hero Initiative.
Good.
So it was just a really cool all-around positive thing, and I hope it keeps doing well enough that he can keep doing it.
Yeah.
From what I understand, we didn't see any numbers, but I've heard that the annual outsold a lot of Big 2 books that week. which is, I mean, yeah, the power of having the word Miller on, yeah, on the cover, yeah, or Millar. But yeah, that was a super cool and fun thing to do. And I'm very grateful to Mark for letting me do it.
I still remember you telling me what was my favorite part about this, which is the review that came back that said, oh, this is written by a serial killer.
Yeah.
and then seeing the artwork, oh, and drawn by a serial killer.
And the best part is that was from our editor. That was from Rachel herself, who she was being interviewed on. I think it was either CBR or Newsarama or somebody. And she was like, yeah, every interview they would call out a different story. You know, they were, yeah, trying to give everybody a different share. And so they got to us, and she was like, when I saw this story, I was like, man, the guy who wrote this serial killer. And then she saw Steve's artwork come in completely separate. Like, it was in the submissions, and she was like, serial killer? Serial killer. Perfect. Let's put them together. This is going to be a great team. And it is. And actually, Steve and I hope to do more work together in the future.
Yeah.
He's been super tied down. He's actually doing some fairly big work.
Nice.
That's right, awesome. Now that has taken, I think, taken a lot more time than he originally anticipated. Yeah. But dude is ridiculously talented, so I can't wait to see whatever his next, whatever his next thing is.
It's always good.
I think we're starting to get to the end, but what are you doing now? Like,
yeah, well, I mean, for me right now, it's a lot of. So last year, Millerworld came out, and then I also directed the NC Comic Con documentary.
Yeah, which is great.
Thank you, guys. Which came out last year. So I sort of spent the last year and a half releasing things and marketing things to where the tank is dry.
Yeah.
At this point. So this year, for me, I sat down about a week ago, and I just outlined, okay, here are the five projects that I really want to focus on this year and get these out and get written. So two of them are comic, original comic projects, one of which I'll show you guys when we get off some art.
Awesome.
Got some art on. The other, which is actually, hopefully, if funding and everything comes through, with Hoyt Solo, who's here at the show. Hoyt's a
guy that we've become buddies with.
Hoyt's an amazing guy. I love Hoyt to death, so I'm really excited to hopefully we'll get to work on that together. And then I'm going to go back and do my first feature film script in probably 3 or 4 years. After kind of getting burned out with filming, so I'm going to come back, had an idea, and I'm going to take 3-4 months and actually go back and write a feature again. So this time it's just a lot of getting something back in the tank. And then on top of that, I'm, like I said, I'm media director of NC Comic Con. We just announced a brand expansion. So now we have 2 shows a year. NC Comic Con Oak City in March and Bull City in November.
Which is cool because we're going to be a pretty decent part of that.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
Yeah,
which
is
pretty cool.
I actually need to talk to you guys about that.
Awesome.
Good things.
We're setting them on fire. We're going to let the Name Redacted guys come. They're getting on stage. We're going to put...
How do you guys feel about man thongs?
So, staying busy.
Yeah, good.
That's awesome.
I don't really feel like doing pics.
I don't
want
to do pics.
Go to conventions. That's my pick.
Yeah. Plugs. Do you have plugs? Do you have anywhere people can find you online to keep up with what you're doing?
I just rebuilt my website. So it's just Cliff Bumgardner, which is a mouthful, but it's Cliff. And then Bumgardner is like a good-for-nothing gardener. Like, bum and gardener. It's very phonetic, I promise. CliffBumgardner.com is where you can find me and Twitter and Instagram and all that shit's off there. And then NCComicCon.com to learn about the shows.
Awesome. Yeah. That sounds good.
Yeah.
I think that's an episode.
Yeah. The only thing you got to look out for us is, of course, we're doing NC Comic Con Oak City with them. And not only that, but we'll give you some more information on the Kickstarter as it comes.
Yes.
That's about it. That's a show.
Yeah.
That's a full show.
Yeah.
Like, there was a start, there's a middle, and now there's an ending.
Now the only thing left for them to do is go out and touch some butts.
Very true. From Name Redacted, I'm Alexander Fulmer.
And I'm Chris Nielsen.
And he said it already, but now I'm going to say it because Colin's not here and I don't get a chance to do this very often. So also, go out and touch some butts.